Hello and welcome back to the Irreverent Gentleman podcast. I'm Trent Gander, the Irreverent Gentleman. Today we're going to be talking about an important subject, the subject of communication. So we're going to talk about why communication is important, and then later on I'm going to give you an example of how layered communication can significantly help a situation that you may find yourself in. First things first, why is communication important? Well, literally anytime you interact with somebody else, you're communicating. In order to make that beneficial for you, you have to communicate clearly. Body language, tone of voice, facial expression, intonation, and a whole bunch of other things all factor into communication verbally, physically, and textually. Now, we are at a great disadvantage when we're communicating through text, but also at a great advantage. With text, you can't really get the benefit of hand motions, facial expressions, intonation. But what you do get is the clarity of words that you use to describe something. I've missed three things a lot, but it's much easier to be able to go over something and look at it again when it's in a textual format than to say, did I hear him correctly? I don't want to ask a question because once it leaves somebody's head after they've spoken it, it's kind of hard for them to get it back again. But if they've rehearsed it a couple of times or got it really down and really remember what they're trying to communicate, it gets easier. But sometimes we don't have that luxury. So having notes and written things that you can hand out to people at a talk or at a presentation really helps them to be able to not only trigger their memories, but also for you to be able to trigger yours. That is a layered approach to communication. If you want to save time, you don't call someone up. You text them or you write them a message. You get it to them so that they can read it at their convenience. Verbally communicating with someone requires that you have their attention and vice versa. And that's one of the things that we see in public speaking is that you have to be able to get the attention of a wide audience. Usually they're all going to be there for a similar reason, and that gives you some common ground. But you have to be able to do it in such a way, in such a repeatable way, that they'll understand why, how, and what you're trying to communicate. This requires you to use smaller words. Obviously, if I go up in front of a bunch of people who are lawyers or people in the medical field, I can use bigger words. I can use the wording or the jargon of their profession to help them understand what I'm trying to communicate. But to get to the larger audience, maybe the people who are across a wide variety of skills, learning levels, and things like that, you have to narrow it down. Now people say, act like you're speaking to a five-year-old. You don't have to do the ooey-gooey baby talk. But you still have to be able to have words simple enough for a child to understand. Because really, our understanding is like that of a child. It's much easier to communicate concepts simply than to try to overcomplicate things and get them to understand. Unless the subject itself is complicated, much like communication. But you have to be able to condense it. If I say blah, 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 and all those words are jargon words that you don't really understand, I might as well not be talking to you at all because I have to communicate effectively and clearly for you to be able to understand. And that's one of the reasons why I like writing, because people understand words. If you can read, you can understand me. If you can look up a word and find out what I'm trying to say, it makes more sense. You can't really do that without the context of knowing how to spell it, which you don't get when you are speaking to someone. You can't be, oh, hang on. Stop you right in the middle of your really in-depth, detailed explanation about something. How do you spell this word? Breaks up the train of thought, brings up the flow of the conversation or the presentation, and just throws things out. So, in order to get your flow going, and in order to maintain the flow of conversation or the presentation, use small and condensed words. It's better to oversimplify something for people to be able to understand than it is to overcomplicate things rather than trying to have word soup in the air and people trying to spoon out what they can. The important thing is that you get the idea and the concept and the important things across. When I was learning how to write and doing things in my grammar class, they taught us about how to write a news article. And the news article is the idea of an upside-down pyramid compared to a fiction story or a report, which is a right-side-up pyramid. An upside-down pyramid has the base, the important thing at the top. You're given all the information you need to know in the first few sentences or paragraphs, which is why we get headlines that seem so choppy but tell us all we need to know about the story. And then they get more detailed as you go toward the bottom. So if I want to read like one thing and maybe read a couple of paragraphs, I set it up as a newspaper article. You get everything you need to know. When I do my blog posts, I write more like a fiction story or more like a box, because it's the things you need to know, what I'm going to be talking about, and then supporting points for that opinion or that idea or that practice. I try to keep it not from narrowing down. You'll notice if you read a lot of my blog posts that they kind of wrap up kind of similarly. I have the idea, I have the example, I have why it's important, and then I have the wrap up. That is kind of between fiction story, which is we introduce a concept, we introduce an individual, a set of individuals, we introduce the problem, and then we expand on that, and then we show how that problem is resolved. And this may take several chapters or several hundred words, several thousand words, that's depending on your writing style and the length of the story you're trying to tell. But that doesn't really work when we're trying to be fast and easily eaten, for lack of a better term, for you to be able to ingest the communication that is being portrayed through words. The story needs to be able to be consumed easily. You need to be able to take the information being presented to you, and you need to be able to process it in such a way that people know what's going on. You're not going to have this very, very dense information at the beginning of a fiction story, because you're just starting to start the scene. You start the scene, you start painting a picture, and then you start adding on to that. You add another picture and another picture. And soon you have this wide mural of a situation, a problem, and a resolution. Very similar to how we see in older archaeological digs, when they have murals that tell a story about, this king defeated these kings at this time, or this deity helped us at this time, or these are religious practice, this is our day-to-day life. They have to communicate a three-dimensional situation in two dimensions. And that's a lot easier with a mural, because you can actually see that. You can kind of understand how they view the world. You don't really have that with text. Yes, crafting an argument or crafting a story is very similar to painting a picture, but instead you're painting it with words, and the canvas is the minds of the people who are going to be reading that story. However, if we're going to have a very little amount of time and a very rushed situation, we're going to use the newspaper format. We're going to have all the stuff you need to know right in the beginning. If that's all you take away from it, remember that and you'll be good. And then we refine that, and we refine it to the point that many more details that are less important but still need to be there are eventually revealed through the process of reading or through the process of speaking. So usually when you see people come up, they're going to be talking about whatever it is, the next business plan, the returns from last month's projects. They're going to tell you the important things first. And then they're going to tell you they should tell you the details about them after they hit the important points. If you have a little amount of time, you need to cover the important parts first. Because if I waste all my time talking about the minutiae of things, you're going to miss everything that you need to know about the situation, which is why radio communications and other things like that are all very truncated. They're very tight. They're very refined. They don't have a lot of extraneous materials, because if you add more and more detail to something, longer sentences, longer paragraphs, people are going to have their eyes rolled back, and there's more of a chance that you're going to lose important parts of information by the over amount of extraneous words. This is one of the reasons why I personally like using medium to big words, because they take a lot of hums and haws and uhs that you would find in a very simplistic writing style, condense 10 words into one. And while that may not work all the time for the audience you're dealing with, sometimes you will have to take one word and make it into several. But it's much easier to condense things down and have only important word phrases or word choices communicate what they need to know, rather than, oh, I'm going to tell you this huge and long and drawn-out saga about this thing. I don't care what the thing is. Whatever thing that you're there or to learn about or you're trying to teach people about, they need to know the absolute important things about that subject, and they need to know them as soon as possible, which is done through the smallest amount of understandable words as possible. You need to be direct. Direct with your word uses, direct with your phrasing, direct with your intonation and inflections, and direct in your body language. If you're just kind of hunching around and doing things like that, you lose confidence and you start to ramble. So you need to avoid rambling, which is done by knowing what you're going to be talking about and condensing it again. I'm going to keep using that phrase because it's the important part. You're going to repeat points as you go through the process. Now, continually reminding them of the important parts and dealing with new important parts is how you start to build in both writing and speaking presentations. So you have the important things, then you reiterate the important things, and then you build on the important things by adding new important things that maybe don't need to be known right off the bat. You refine the information as they get in, but they have the large important raw materials at the beginning, then they see it in a slightly different light in the middle, and then they have it in its refined version at the end. So if someone reads the first two paragraphs of your article or your posting, they need to get as much as they can out of those things, or they need to have their attention piqued to an extent that they're going to read more than just two. A lot of the times when I'm coming across certain articles, it's like I read one or two articles, paragraphs, it's like, okay, my eyes roll back in my head and I start skimming. It needs to be in such a way that I don't want to skim. That is by knowing exactly what you're talking about, knowing a good portion of the industry that you're going to be finding yourself in, and knowing what's important to emphasize. Because there's one problem that writers have when doing research-based articles, and that is having a dry recitation of facts, as my friend Ty Mall over at Fiction and Copywriting Decoded would repeatedly say. The dry recitation of facts is a killer for articles. Pretty much it's just, I'm going to copy a bunch of things, make a bunch of references, and here's how they are. Research-based projects are, here's evidence that supports this point. This is why this evidence is important. This is why this thing is important. Knowing this, here's our conclusion. There's roughly any research paper you will ever do condensed down into a couple of sentences. You need to explain why you include certain quotes and why certain information is important. You can get rid of all the worthless and useless information that is related to this thing. You need to be able to pick out the golden nuggets that will help the reader understand the why of your conclusion and the how of your conclusion. And you need to have those nuggets of information spread throughout and support your entire article, your entire talk, your entire point. Because if you don't, you're going to have this huge desert of not important information separating the nuggets. And people are going to be like, oh man, I found this one thing, and I'm going to continue to dig and dig and dig and dig and dig, and I can't find anything else. And they dig more and dig more and dig more, and then finally they find another thing. Oh, wow, this is a really awesome thing. The only problem is that people's attention span can be really short. Unless they absolutely love the subject and they can spend hours and hours and hours researching it, they're going to lose interest maybe 10, 15 minutes in, unless they find another interesting tidbit, which is that nugget of information. So spread nuggets throughout the entirety of your article and your talk and have those important points reiterated every so often so they keep finding those things and keep looking to see what's the next thing. We're going to move on to the next part of our talk with an example of layered communication. But first, let's have a little bit of an ad. Okay, well, those of you who read the blog know that I am a very avid gamer. I absolutely love competitive video games, and if you listen to some of my previous articles and blog posts, you'll find out that a lot of what I do for work is actually involving the firearms industry and things like that. And it's also what I generally research into somewhat on my free time. And so games that that build off of that and can incorporate World War tactics are really fascinating to me. However, not all of them are absolutely fun to play or are able for me to be able to play them. But back in the day, I was on with several of my friends playing this one old game, Battlefield 2, to be specific. And we were playing a particular map. It's called Wake Island 2007. And we were using an app called Discord to have direct voice communication between us. And we had set ourselves up within the infrastructure of our side. Now, to set up a bit more, Wake Island in Battlefield 2 is a two-sided conflict with a Chinese-based island chain or atoll known as Wake Island. It has two places, North Village, North Base, South Village, Beach, and Air Base for the Chinese. And they have the uncapturable spawn point of the U.S. carrier off of the coast of Wake Island. And so it's the American side's goal to completely own everything on Wake Island. And it's the Chinese objective to hold as much as they can for as long as they can on Wake Island until the points on either side either completely run out or the Chinese can no longer spawn. Which is referred to as locking out in video game terminology. So my friends and I were on the Chinese side this time. And within the game itself, within the TeamSpeak interface, you have the commander. You can talk to each one of the squads individually or entirely and assign them things. And he supplies supplies, support, and artillery strikes, depending on the requirements of the stage. And my one friend, well, let's call him Gruchan, he is a pretty decent commander. He's not one of the best, but he is knowledgeable and he is responsive, which is very important. So he's the command infrastructure. He's at the top. He's coordinating between all the different squads and some of the individuals in that power structure. And he's calling out where enemies are and directing the flow of forces to places that need it and away from places that don't. Then we have my associate, Ghosty Sniper. Now, he and I usually like to be in the same squad working together. But at this point, we were in two different squads. I believe he was squad 2 and I was squad 3. Now, Wake Island spawns 3 different tanks. This is important because tanks, the armor factor, are absolutely killer against light armor vehicles, other tanks, and especially infantry. Now, infantry can take down tanks. It just takes a lot more effort or takes a lot more skill in order to do that. But if you do it correctly, you can completely lock down an area. Now, in Battlefield 2, it has a moderate realistic setting or engine. So there's moderate bullet drop. There are arcing shots that you can make with tanks. And there are a much longer range for weapons than people generally think. In-game, I've made 120-foot shots with pistols. And I've made significant hits and been able to take people down much longer than what people think pistols are actually capable of. Like they are in the real world. So we had 3 methods of communication in play here. We had our Discord communication, where we can make communication between squad leaders of squad 3, squad leader of squad 2, and the commander without clogging the information or clogging the radio waves of the rest of the game. Now, Commander Gruchan would be able to direct all the squads as needed or address particular squads, but he could also communicate directly with us and we could feed him information as we came across it, and he could distribute it among the squads. This could be done through Discord or the game itself. Now, additionally, we were able to cross-pollinate, for lack of a better term, our information between squads instead of relying on Gruchan to be able to do that. We could give them direct information to their squad if they needed firing support or flanking information, stuff like that. Then we had the other in-game level of communication, which was between squad leader and squad. Communication between the squad and other squads is important. It was been found and developed within Sturmtruppen tactics in the First World War, and was eventually adopted and refined in various ways through small unit tactics all the way up until today. The idea being that small, mobile, self-sufficient groups of soldiers are much more effective than large groups of soldiers that have to relay all this information back to someone who's not really there, who can't read the situation and has to kind of make guesses as to the information that they receive, and that can create a lot of garbled communication and result in a lot of wasted effort, men, and supplies because they can't see and read the situation that they're in. So, we're on Wake Island. Gruchan is commander, squad 3 is run by me, and squad 2 is run by Ghosty Sniper. I'm in a tank. Squad leader of squad 3 is also, or squad leader of squad 2, Ghosty Sniper, is also in a tank. So he's up more on this one hilly part, the middle island chain of Wake Island, while I am by North Base with my tank. Pretty much anything that comes across that bridge, I am to stop, and that pretty much holds back one of the tanks, one or two of the tanks, and general infantry movements that don't involve having to swim between the small island chain. Now, with my tank, I'm able to cover a certain area, and I can also see if there's splash damage, for lack of a better term, from Squad 2's tank, which is lobbing rounds into the village area base, which has a spawn point in it. And the American players are trying to get out of that base. Generally, North Village of Wake Island is the first one to fall to the Americans, if not, is going to be South Base or Beach. And in certain rare occasions, airbase. So generally, the Americans try to take the northern half of the island and push south, or just immediately take the central part of the island's chain, or control the south part. Depending on how it is, there can be a significant stalemate between the two if you have two really skilled sides, and then it drags on for hours and can be either grueling or fun, depending on how it works. So I could call in artillery strikes from Gruchan because of communication directly to him through Discord or commander interface because I was a squad leader. Then I could inform my squad of what was going to happen and we could arrange ourselves accordingly. If we needed some extra tank support, I could immediately use Discord to communicate with Squad 2, with Ghosty Sniper and his squad, and we can coordinate our attacks. They're not like everyone's rushing to one place. Meanwhile, this huge group of enemies are over here taking a different point. We can divide our forces and use them effectively while communicating to see, do we need more men? Do we need more force? Are we in the right place? Do we need artillery? Do we not need artillery? Things of that nature. Now, this particular time, we had locked down the entire north part of Wake Island with these two tanks. With our squads, my squad was protecting my tank and covering the right and left flank, making sure that people weren't sneaking up on me and trying to blow it up. Squad 2 underneath Ghosty Sniper was able to lob tank shells from cover, oddly enough. From cover, in order to start doing damage to areas that he wouldn't actually necessarily be able to reach if he had exposed himself, but lobbing them with me calling in splash damage and stuff allowed him to be able to maintain the safety of his tank, which was a huge force multiplier, while still being able to deal damage to enemy infantry while I maintained having my cannon ready just in case they attempted to bring in another tank or something else, so I wouldn't be having to wait for it to reload, but only taking shots of opportunity if they presented themselves, while the kind of moderate artillery barrage from Squad 2's tank kept them pinned down. So while they are getting kind of decimated by this, and if there's suddenly this huge effort of men trying to push from there, we could call an artillery strike from Gruchan. Being able to clearly communicate all these things was necessary for us to win that round. If we were just kind of all just canoodling around trying to figure out, hey, what's going on? I don't know what my squad's doing. I don't know what my commander's doing. I don't know what the other squads are doing. We would have probably failed. However, because of our ability to communicate between the three levels of communication, that being squad level, inter-squad level, and commander level, we were able to coordinate effectively to get a much better outcome than if we had no idea what we were doing. So coordinating that allowed us to use tactics to resolve our problem, that being invading American forces in a fictional video game. That allowed us to be able to win that round. And in life, we need to be able to coordinate between other departments or other groups, which would be our like the squad level, and then report to the high brass without necessarily having to play a game of telephone between individual squads and high brass. Because if I have to say, hey, Gruchan, I need you to tell Squad 2 that there is a group of individuals coming by boat to South Base where he is. I need you to tell him that. Okay, hang on. I'm a commander. I'm going to pass that on to Squad 2. Oh, wait, something has taken my attention off of that. I need to do something else that's also currently pressing, and I might forget, or I might communicate something different to Squad 2 if I have forgotten, or that the message gets garbled. It's much easier for me to say, hey, Squad 2, you got people coming in on the towards South Base. Could you take care of them for us? Okay, Squad 3, we'll take care of that. Compared to relying on somebody else to communicate to them. So the more links in the chain that we have to communicate through, the more likely our message is going to be lost and the information going to be changed. Peer-to-peer, for lack of a better term, information transfer is a lot easier. If I tell you, hey, this is the problem, we need you to resolve it, it's going to be a lot more quick and a lot more understandable than me telling Bob over there to go tell you that there's a problem and you need to resolve it, because Bob might change the story. Bob might not remember. Bob might take 3 hours to tell you something that I needed done 30 minutes ago. So having a tiered layer of communication, isolating each tier, but yet allowing the tier to communicate amongst itself, such as, for example, within BF2. As a squad leader, I'm supposed to communicate information my squad gives me to the commander and the commander to other squads. With the situation that we had, I was allowed to communicate that information not only to the commander, but also to other squads, shortening the chain and increasing the likelihood that the response time would be quick enough to be able to resolve an issue that had just come up. Keeping the squad level information separated, however, allows for squad leaders or project leaders to be able to communicate effectively between each other without having to listen to possibly false or outdated information from other people's squad members or other under department individuals, other co-workers. Well, if Bob and Jack and Mary and Phyllis all have different stories, and they're all trying to tell one person, and I don't know which one of them, what information is important, which one is most trustworthy, most likely the squad leader or the project leader would know that. If I listen to all of them while listening to all of my people, I'm going to get confused and not have enough information to condense, or have too much information to condense to effectively function. But if I condense the information from my squad or my work team and then transfer it over to the leader of another work team, that makes it a lot easier. And we don't have all this back and forth between the two groups and playing abject telephone with 16 different lines of information going in and out of each other. Whether that information is right or wrong could easily be corrupted with so many lines of communication. But it's a lot easier if you have set lines of communication. Okay, department head goes to department head, or squad leader to squad leader, or up higher up. The necessary information getting to each of those individuals quickly, easily, and clearly compared to, okay, everyone's talking at once and I can't hear you, but I'm going to listen to only half of you. It's like, no, we're going to cut the number of people that they have to deal with down to a small number. That way, the information is less likely to be corrupted, because the longer the chain is in the game of telephone, the more that chain of information is going to be corrupted. So direct communication is going to lessen the amount of corruption it could receive in transit, because the amount of transit it has to go is from person to person, whether through text or through verbal communication. But first, it has to be condensed down to enough information or enough eyewitness information to be transferred. So seeing a boat going over to South Base compared to, well, I think there's a boat going down to South Base. My squad or I myself see the boat going. I communicate that directly to the squad that is in South Base. Or if I can't do that because we're not on the same Discord chat or similar thing, I communicate that to commander and ask them to communicate that to the squad at the South Base. That way it's not like trying to get their attention when they have a dedicated line of communication either from me or from the commander, and I have a much shorter chain of information transfer than I would if I had to have it hand delivered to somebody by 16 different couriers. So if you shorten your chains of communication, just like chains of resources, you're more likely to have success, because the longer a chain of information is, the more likely you are to lose a lot of information between point to point. So shortening that up and making sure there's not a lot of links that it has to go through is going to be more effective at transferring information and allowing you to be able to make your decisions faster and more easily, while enabling you to address new problems quickly. Well, I hope that has helped you today. Hopefully it's not too rambly. Catch us next time on the Reverend Gentleman Podcast. Please follow us at the University of Manliness.wordpress.com. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and all of the places where this podcast can be found. If you're interested, check out the blog, again, at universityofmanliness.wordpress.com, or stay tuned for our next episode, whenever that will be. Have a good evening. I hope you learned something.